Hello everyone. Good morning, good afternoon. It is Monday, December 12th, 2022, and we are about to get started with our weekly W3C Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force community call. As many of you know, we normally begin with a few housekeeping items before we dive into the main topic for today, which again is connecting the European Higher Education Accreditation Framework to the Verifiable Credentials ecosystem. And we have Colin Tuck with us, and I'll make sure to introduce him again later. All right, without further ado, a reminder, this is our IP note. You know that anyone can participate in our calls. However, if you're planning to make any substantive contributions to any of this work, you must be a member of the Credentials Community Group and have full IPI agreement signed. This is very easy. There is a link to join the group. It's free. The link is in the agenda that was circulated. So effectively, just create an account and then you'll have to take a look at our community contributor license agreement. Call notes. So we are hosting this event live, but also we are recording it, and we then distribute the minutes and the recording of this meeting through the emails, and then they're archived at our website. To keep things coordinated, we use the chat to get on the queue. So if you want to speak, please type Q+ to add yourself to queue, and Q- if you want to take yourself out of the queue, and wait for me, your coordinator today, to ask you to unmute. Great. That's how you do it, Colin. Awesome. All right. So we typically go through a round of introduction and reintroductions by the time we have a bit more people coming in. So if there's anyone new to the call, except you, Colin, I'll give you the floor in a second that wants to introduce himself or herself, please do so now.
Hello everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much for welcoming me here. I'm Francesca Pileri from Rest Romoli, who powers the platform, the Open Badge platform, My Open Badge. We have consistently worked with companies in the entrepreneurial world, but we are now facing the challenge of expanding to higher education institutions. So I'm very happy to be here and to participate in this discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francesca, and very welcome. Thank you for joining us. Moving on to announcement and reminders. Anyone has any events, initiatives, anything worthwhile flagging to the group, feel free to put yourself in the queue and then share. Okay. There's always an opportunity to do so later, so if anything comes to mind, please share. So great, that takes care of our housekeeping stuff. Let's dive into the main topic for today. As a way of introduction, we've been hearing a lot of talk around the governance layer of our ecosystem, and technically, that resolves into talking about trusted registries. While we have seen a number of different initiatives in that front from across the globe, today we're focusing on one specific such initiative that is ongoing in Europe. And to do that, we have asked Colin Tuck, who is the director of EQUAR, aka the European Quality Assurance Registry, to share with the group what's happening in Europe around adding a bit of quality assurance and trust to the credentialing ecosystem. And Acquire particularly has been one of the early adopters of the either European blockchain service infrastructure around the use case diploma. And they are, in fact, one such trusted registry. And so without further ado, I would like to ask Colin to open up his mic. And Colin, maybe you can introduce yourself first, and then feel free to share if you have any slides, or take it away. Thank you very much for being with us. Over to you.
Yes, hi everyone. Thanks, thanks Simone for the kind introduction. And hi everyone, pleased to join your meeting today. So I'm Colin. I've been working as the director of ECHA, the European Quality Assurance Register, basically since its founding, which is in 2008. And so I've prepared a few slides indeed. I'm going to show them via Prezi. I hope you see them not mirrored, but the right way around. Is that correct?
We're not seeing your slides quite yet,
Colin. You normally see them in the, do you see them in the video?
No. And oh, this may be a factor of us using Jitsi. We've had a few difficulties in the past. So.
That's
alternatively, you can try to share it. I don't know if you have a link that...
Let me then quickly put the link. Sorry, that's going to take a second, but I can probably send you a link over just in the, right. I've never used that live Prezi before, but it's supposed to be possible. So let's see. Let me put the link into the chat.
Okay, it's loading for me.
Yeah, maybe that's great.
Give it another few seconds.
Well, I give it a few seconds, and I will also send. That's the live link, and I just share for reference. I just share a link that will also work afterwards again. Well, then the live one should be live one should be good for now. Let me just change my video here then. I wouldn't use that tool, but just present it from here live. Okay, so I'm going to try to sum up in a few words. What is our starting point? What is the European Higher Education Quality Assurance System? Because I do understand that, of course, there might be some people around here from Europe, but not, many will not be, and some might be familiar with that. Some might not. So sorry for those that are already familiar with it, if it's going to be any boring. But I think it's just to illustrate what is the starting point for linking this to the verifiable credential ecosystem. So in the European higher education area, we have a quality assurance framework that consists of an agreed set of standards. They are called the ESG, or the European Standards and Guidelines for Quality Assurance. They have already been agreed since 2005 as a general set of standards for quality assurance at institutional level, at external level, in higher education for the whole European higher education area. And these standards are then used by national and regional quality assurance and accreditation bodies to do evaluations and accreditations of higher education institutions and programs in Europe. Then in addition to the ESG as a set of standards, you have ECHA, the organization I represent, the European Quality Assurance Register, and we are the official register of quality assurance agencies that have proven their compliance with the agreed set of standards. So we currently have about 50 agencies on the register from a number of European countries, and these agencies work all based on that common agreed reference framework. So we have currently those countries you see in green on the map, if you do see the slides, of course. So that's 29 countries in Europe that do work in line with the agreed standards and that are working with agents, quality assurance and accreditation agencies that are registered on ECHA, and that's a part of the common agreed framework. Then for a couple of years, we have had, in addition to the register of agencies, we have also been maintaining a pan-European database of quality assured higher education institutions and programs. So we have been working to bring together all the information on accredited higher education institutions and programs by those 50 agencies in one single place, in one single European one-stop shop, to make that easily available for the public. Because we thought, okay, we do have a common framework, so we need to have also the information on who has been accredited in line with that agreed framework in one place and in one comparable format. That was especially created for the purposes of furthering recognition and automatic recognition within the European area. But I think it's something that comes in very helpful now on trying to link this existing framework to the verifiable credential ecosystem and to digital credentials in more general. Because as a result of that work on DECA, we have a very comprehensive data set on accredited higher education institutions and programs in at least 23 European countries, and that's the number keeps growing because we are covering more and more countries by their agencies being registered with us and by their agencies providing us with data on accredited higher education institutions and programs. So since we already have data for so many countries in a standardized format, it of course seems quite logical to us to connect those to the verifiable credentials ecosystem to make sure that quality assurance data can be easily used in the field of digital credentials. I'm going to say a few words about linking this with the European Digital Credentials for Learning initiative, which is an EU initiative, and that is currently not based on verifiable credentials, but as far as we understand, that might change in the future. And that is just to illustrate briefly that we have also other digital credentials ecosystems where DECA data is already linked to. So the European Digital Credentials initiative is based because it is an EU initiative, it's based on every country providing a list of accredited education providers. So in that case, there's basically a per country export of data from DECA that countries can use to feed that information into the European Digital Credentials ecosystem. And once they do that, it can be used in a standardized way. But I'm not going to go into details with that, but rather say a few words about linking DECA and the verifiable credentials ecosystem, which is, as Simone has said, been inspired by the EPSI initiative. But I do want to underline that it's of course not limited to EPSI for us, because in a way EPSI was the first concrete starting point where we were that made us think about linking DECA to verifiable credentials and expressing data from DECA as verifiable credentials. But we also soon realized that is not that should not be limited to EPSI, and that of course there might be a more generic use case for that. So in EPSI, as some of you probably know, the general idea is that quality assurance or accreditation results itself is also expressed as a verifiable credential. In our case, the issue of that accreditation credential would be ECHA. In a way, it's we are not as such the issue of the accreditation, because we are not accrediting education institutions, but we are accrediting the accreditors, if you like. So in this case, we will be acting as a proxy for the accredited agencies to issue verifiable credentials. And they would, of course, be issued to the higher education institution that is accredited, with some details in it about the scope or specific program, study program or degree that is accredited. Of course, we have, I think we have one, when dealing with accreditation credentials, we have one, one advantage or one aspect that makes some things rather simple for us, because all the data and all the information we are talking about is public by nature, so privacy is not really an issue at all for an accreditation credential. So we, our approach so far has been to basically offer verifiable credentials demonstrating accreditation for download, which could be for public download. So the institution concerned or anyone else who needs to rely on it could use it, because there's really nothing private or secret in there. So as a result of as a result of discussions within APSI, we've started on the one hand to issue APSI compliant or APSI standard aligned verifiable credentials to use within the APSI ecosystem. But we have also in parallel then, mainly as a proof of concept for now, we have also been issuing, a generic DECA verifiable credentials just to show how we could easily, issue verifiable credentials for any accreditation or quality assurance in DECA. So I'm going to, say a few words about the implementation, how we're doing that for now. We're using a software called SSI Kit by Vault ID to basically do the verifiable credential signing, so we basically integrated that with our existing DECA backend, and whenever we need a DECA report expressed as a verifiable credential, we'd use the SSI Kit to request and sign that verifiable credential, and then it is, as I said, eventually presented publicly for download. So this is how it would look if you look as a single accreditation record on DECA. In this case, it's an institutional accreditation of a university in Spain, and here you would see that you could find the verifiable credential there, both in the generic DECA format, which would be available for all institutions and all accreditations we have. And in this case, because it is an institution, university that is participating also in the APSI early adopters, you would also find it there in a specific format that APSI requires. I'm just want to zoom into how the credential looks like. That's now a generic DECA credential. You would see the main problem, I would say, or the main shortcoming we see now with the generic credential is that we are not able really to issue it to any DIT for the university at the moment. So at this moment, for a proof of concept, we just identify the higher education institution by a plain UI, which refers to its identifier on DECA. But of course that is not, that would not be very good for production use. In the case we do have an institution that participates in APSI, of course it would be issued to the APSI DID of the institution. Otherwise you would see the details of the accreditation or in the credential. We also include any identifiers of that institution that we know of, for example, from the Erasmus program, from other European registries of higher education institutions, etc. and then, of course, there, this point for generic credentials, we issue them via DIT web from our side. whereas the EPSI credentials would be issued by our DIT EPSI. And of course, we also include the information on the actual accreditation agency on whose behalf we are issuing that credential and who has done the actual accreditation. Now, to finish off with open questions and issues we have, I could see, of course, one main question is how will we link quality assurance credential and the qualification credential that is issued under that accreditation or under that quality official quality assurance. In the case of EPSI, there is an approach of a trusted issuer register. So in the case of EPSI, it will work in such a way that the higher education institution takes the verifiable credential that we issue to them and uploads that themselves onto the trusted issuer register with their own EPSI DIT. Of course, the biggest problem for doing anything at scale for us would be to how do we link our existing data set to higher education institutions' identity in the sense of any kind of DIT-based identity they might use for also later on issuing credentials to students. For EPSI, that works only manually for now. So if we do have an institution that participates in the EPSI early adopters, we would need to go into our data set and record their EPSI DIT somewhere before we could issue an EPSI aligned accreditation credential to them. As I said before, for other higher education institutions, we do not have any system in place yet for linking the data we have to any kind of that the institution might be using. We have been thinking that that could be a possibility for trying some kind of auto discovery or auto matching of the webs, because one of the information that we do have on every higher education institution that is in DECA is the information on their domain and website. So that would be one possible avenue for doing that. Of course, we might think if there are any other ways to reliably and automatically prove or link the higher education institution's identity in DECA to their DIT of whatever sort. So, for example, we could imagine that if a higher education institution could produce a verifiable presentation that includes credential by any kind of authoritative source that confirms their VAT number or other legal identifier that we might know, then we might have a possibility to link the identity, but we don't really have any clear solution to that problem yet. And I think that would be the biggest challenge for scaling this up, because we couldn't obviously work with an approach where we would need to manually link institutions' identities in DECA with their identity in the verifiable credentials and data ecosystem. And another open issue that we have is, of course, revocation and status of credentials, where we haven't implemented anything yet. But here we presume that this is not going to be a major issue to do, because, again, unlike the actual student diploma or student degree use case, we do not have any privacy issue here. So it would be there will be no concern, for example, to issue revocation lists that are completely public, because the information which accreditation might be revoked would anyway be public by nature. So I think to sum it up, really the biggest challenge we would have to scaling up the use of DECA-issued accreditation credentials would really be to identify higher education institutions and match their identity in the verifiable credentials ecosystem with their existing identity in DECA. So thanks for that, and look forward to some questions and discussions with you guys.
Thank you very much, Colin. We'll probably give it a few minutes here for people to unmute or drop any questions. Let me kick this off. So As I understand, ECWA is a registry of accrediting organization. So not directly a registry of all the accredited universities. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And what is the relationship? How do you, so can you get from ECWA to the sort of the trusted issuer registry or the registry of universities?
Well, of course, in a way, ECHA is not a register of universities. ECHA is a register of agencies. But then because we are already federating that information from those agencies, which which universities and programs they have accredited, that's why we do already have a federated trusted issuer list in a way.
Great. So there is this clearly connection between the quality assurance registry that you run and the accredited university. So you could get to it in a sense. Okay.
Yeah. I think that the main problem is that we have no direct relation with the individual universities. So we do gather the information on universities and which of them have been accredited, but we don't have a direct, I mean, it's not that the institutions have any direct contact or login with us or something of that sort.
Great, perfect. That's thank you for the clarification. All right, we have a couple of questions. Jen, over to you.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the great presentation. Really interesting and relevant from some other working groups that I'm a part of, but could you explain a little bit how the accreditation credential is published, or how is that made available to the public?
Mm. Well, at this moment, they're quite simply they're made available on our website in the DECA database, where you find all the accreditation information, and for every accreditation record, you would find the corresponding verifiable credential next to it. So it's just sort of thrown out there publicly on the web.
Got it, but no kind of API endpoint. It's all in the GUI.
No, there is actually there's an API endpoint that we use internally at this moment. It's not public, but it is going to be very soon. I mean, it's just because we have been testing it for the past couple of months, and in the very near future there will be an API endpoint where you can basically directly access the verifiable credential.
Got it. Thanks.
Thank you, Jen. Great. By the way, I dropped a link to the APIs that the MC ecosystem makes available. So these are not specific to DECWAR, but there is a set of APIs for trusted issuers, so maybe you want to take a look at that. Okay, we have Deb on the queue. Go ahead, Deb. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. So thank you. This is super interesting, not only with regards to our work at Credential Engine, but also because I've been working with Inquahe on their international standards guidelines for QA agencies. And part of what we surfaced in that work is exactly this type of data, the need for trust registries in terms of who are the QA organizations and how can they serve varying roles and who QAs the QA organizations, right? I know that sounds kind of meta, but it's actually super important. The more tactical point I wanted to make here is that this seems like a very logical set of data to use linked open data. So the credential transparency description language actually provides the structure for this, where there's a type of organization, it's QA organization, and then that QA organization can actually issue, document quality assurance credentials that they provide to the institutions. And part of the beauty of it being linked up in data is the data from the institutions and their information about their credentials comes from the institutions. the data from the QA body comes from the QA body, but it all gets connected via the linked open data. And that can be done with CTDL regardless of where the data resides, but also the data that you have already could be published to our registry for providing those kinds of connections.
Yeah, so I think you also posted a link in the chat before, didn't you?
Yeah,
I think we'll definitely look into that, and I think that will be interesting to see where, explore different ways where we could publish everything from that is on DECA as linked open data. We have been focusing a lot on the European learning model, which of course is also a linked open data approach, because that of course is our main, our main focus area. So I think we will, we have been following the developments of the European learning model quite a lot, and we'll work on publishing the DECA data in that format as well.
That's great. Yeah, everything we can do to get this into linked open data and have data contributors coming to it from multiple angles is very useful. Thanks. Mm.
Thank you, Deb. Nate, you're up next. Thank you.
Cool, thanks. Great presentation. I'm always very interested in developments that are in this area of understanding, like, why should we trust this particular credential for this particular person? Could you walk through a little bit from the perspective of a consumer? You know, who is the persona of the consumer of this information? Presumably someone who is looking at a credential that is in your network, and how do they get access? Like, what question are they asking in terms of trust about that credential? And then how does the information that you're presenting answer that question?
I would say the consumer will be asking the question, okay, what is the credential that I'm seeing, or is the institution that I might be studying at? Is that a trustworthy and accredited institution? I would say the biggest challenge is, okay, how do we, and I think that in that way, DECA would give them, it's a very binary yes, no type of answer, because that's, the whole European Quality Assurance Framework is also about, in that regard, a lot about ensuring minimum standards. So it would just give you the information. Of course, this is an accredited university in the European higher education area or not. It will not give you, of course, further details or any kind of rating about the quality. But I think the main challenge I see is how do we get that information to the user, and how do we connect the verifiable credential that an institution might issue to a student with the information on the trust information that could come from DECA.
Thanks.
See if there are other questions in the queue. Nope. Obviously this issue of trusted registries is particularly hot and emerging. At the last IIW, the Internet Identity Workshop, both, I think, Trust Over IP and the Decentralized Identity Foundation, as well as the Credentials Community Group with Manus Pornin, there have been presentations about current work around designing these trusted registries. And this is probably a question out to everyone here on the call that wants to kind of share out if they have been involved in some of those conversations and how, you know, they feel that relate to what's happening in Europe. So this is a bit more of a question from me out to all of you here, if anyone wants to share. So if not, I mean, I do think that is, we're looking ahead at the need of keeping tabs on each other. I think both what I guess Sam Curran and Daryl Donald presented around which what Trustor IP is doing in that respect, and what Manus Borney presented around what the W3C CCG is doing. I think there's already some kind of alignment there. It would be very nice to also bring this movement in Europe into that fold and maybe have some kind of coordination, if not alignment, on where this is going. It feels that there are different moving parts on this particular topic. So, and to resolve governance and, you know, to the question that Nate had, you know, how can we trust the issuer? This is where it's going to land at some point. And rightly, as Deb said, it makes me like this is recursive to the infinite. You know, if we have a trusted registry of issuers, and then there's a trusted registry of accrediting organization, who accredits the accrediting organizations? This is a question for you, Colin, how does that work in Europe? So like, how do the quality assurance agency, you know, get to become one? What is the higher authority on top of it?
Well, I mean, in Europe, of course, it is in higher education. It's in the end, it all comes back to the to how the Bologna process is governed, and that is it's not an international organization, but it's an international intergovernmental process. So you have 49 minus currently two, so 47 countries coming together who, at the level of the education ministries, agreed on the common framework and agreed on the ESG and said, okay, now we agree on a set of standards. We agree on the role of ECHA as a official register of accreditation agencies. So in a way, they gave the mandate. Of course, at international level, I think that would be, that would get more difficult. Of course, you could imagine like a purely subsidiarity-based approach where you say, well, every country basically defines who are the trusted those in this country that can decide on trusted issuers in higher education. And of course, Europe has the advantage of having already a transnational approach. And so you don't need to look at every single country anymore. But at international level, of course, that could be an option of having finding a solution where every country can publish the information who are the trusted issuers in that country.
Deb, go ahead.
So that's a really good example of where the countries have come together and they've defined the jurisdiction, right? And then they've defined the quality assurance rules and processes within that jurisdiction. And that's typically the way it's done. That's not going to go away. But there are increasingly needs for cross-jurisdictional QA processes. In part because people's credentials need to be more mobile, right? So if I got a particular license in the EU, but then I moved to India, what's the meaning of the quality assurance of that credential in the place where I live that's distinct from the jurisdiction where it was issued? So those types of processes are increasingly important. And also that there are increasingly many, many credentials that defy jurisdictions. So, for example, if they're issued by a global company, or if they're explicitly designed to have transfer value, say, from, you know, one country to another, or even from one state to another. So my bottom line point, I guess, is that QA processes are extremely important and very complicated in a world where we need these credentials to have meaning globally.
Yeah, thank you, Deb. This is, I think part of the elephant in the room here is really just the governance of, you know, this whole thing rather than the tech that we use. So it feels like that we have the right instruments, but resolving that, you know, true governance layer at global level, at least, even just in the, say, higher education context, requires some coordination that is not all there yet. What I'm thinking about is the overarching political scaffolding of UNESCO with this global recognition convention. But it feels that even that process is not fully, it hasn't really been adopted or ratified. That convention is not being ratified by everyone in the sector. So, I think even maybe this is about working at this bottom up. I mean, possibly with regions like Europe moving as a whole and finding ways of creating, some kind of, coordination mechanisms with, possibly what may come out of North America, for example. Okay. Any other questions? I wonder if there's anyone here that has given any thought or is familiar with what's happening with GLIFE or, you know, the verifiable legal identity identifiers. That feels like it is another example of a registry that is, could play in this space, although maybe in a less regulatory framed one. Or any other experiences of registries that they've been closer to. All right, let me read this question out a bit. It comes from Colin. All right. Well, yeah, maybe Colin, you could respond to Colin.
Yeah, that was my fault. Thanks. That's a good question. And, to be honest, I am not 100% sure not even in Europe, to what extent how keen higher education institutions and universities are on average to, adopting, verifiable credentials or digital credentials of any sort in their strategy. I mean, on the one end, of course, you see that the EU is, the EU is pushing an infrastructure, developing an infrastructure to allow institutions to do that. But I don't have any clear information yet on whether, how fast I would see higher education institutions to take that up or not. I think it also depends a lot on, what do they see is in it for them. I mean, of course, if there is it might be attractive to higher education institutions, but of course it will also depend on how much students will be asking for it and how much students will be asked for having digital verifiable credentials instead of traditional paper degrees. But, so yeah, hard to say, I find, for now.
All right. All right. We are, if we're out of questions here, it is possible that today we may even give you back a few minutes of your time. It seems we're probably, maybe I'm just reading the room, and this is a very complex topic that we're going to revisit, I sense, more and more in the future, particularly around the sync up with other similar initiatives. Colin, please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I just raised my hand once again for the on the governance, or let's say the governance question at international level. And I do agree with what you said before, that it's more of a governance issue than a tech issue, of course. And in Europe, it has been kind of easy, I would say, because we do have an established governing structure at the European level and the international level. You said, yeah, we have UNESCO. And I think on the one hand, it would make sense to use UNESCO as a platform or to discuss these matters within the UNESCO context, also in relation to the global convention, because I would always say, well, we shouldn't invent a new governing structure just because of a new tech, but we should use the existing and established governing structures and somehow connect them with the new tech rather than trying to invent a new governing structure. But of course, at the European level, at the international level, it might be more tricky because there is not, UNESCO is there, but on the other hand, UNESCO is not governing an international higher education area in such a practical sense as, let's say, the European higher education area is governed by its governing structure. So I think that maybe makes it complex. On the one hand, I think we shouldn't invent a new governing structure. On the other hand, there's not really an existing one at the European level. At the international level.
There's a question from Kalia in the chat, Colin, if you see it.
Yeah, sorry, what is GCCN?
I'm not directly involved in this project, but my close colleague Lucy Yang and John Walker have been leading it. GCCN stands for Global COVID Certificate Network, but they've been working with UNDP and WHO to build a kind of meta directory of trust registries infrastructure using Train. So it's more on the technology side of like, how do you, if you have trust registries, plural, across the globe, how do you find them? And potentially you could use this infrastructure to list registries.
This is actually a great, great, thank you, Kalia, for mentioning Train. It was also, I think, Colin, it's something that you may want to look into as well.
Lucy's here, so she can speak for herself.
There you go. Go ahead, Lucy. Thank you.
Thank you, Kalia, for bringing it up. I was listening. I think so what Kalia mentioned is what my colleague and I were doing initially from the COVID and from Linux Foundation, and we recently moved to United Nations Development Program and work on that in collaboration with the WHO. Well, because WHO is working with the different large networks of COVID credentials, and now I'm moving beyond COVID credentials and figure out how different kind of networks can connect at the meta level, as Kalia mentioned. And one of the things I think Paolo Simona is about to say, like we leverage Train because Train use like DNSSEC. So by leveraging existing like infrastructure that everyone probably is using, especially governments and companies, and how we can leverage that infrastructure to actually help those different ecosystems being discovered in a trusted manner at either global level or just a meta level, because there are going to be more and more smaller trust registries. I think especially that's what we're seeing in the education sector. I was in one of like the discussion, I think 2 weeks ago, there's some EURA initiative in the EU. They're small university kind of consortium. We're issuing credentials. They're talking about they're preferring more kind of like smaller networks and you know kind of trust registries instead of like a bigger one. So what are you going to do when you have so many of them out there, and how you kind of being able to kind of discover them and knowing that be sure that they're saying who they are and help them connect, you know, doing key exchanges and other things. That's what we're pretty much doing for COVID, but now also expanding to other areas of, you know, of use cases. Happy to share more information. We're about to launch the openly, like the specification and an open source kind of core infrastructure in early January. So happy to either present or share more on this forum, like when we have more information to share.
Thank you very much, Lucy, for jumping in. In fact, I remember there's an interesting presentation done recently at the We're building Web of Trust in the Hub from the Train project. It talks about meta registry. I was trying to find quickly the link to that, to the demo of it, or the deck. But yeah, so Colin, this is the issue of meta registry. So that's probably how we try to coordinate across different registries. This feels like it's one possible solution to having more of a federator or distributed way of coordinating around that. Go ahead, Colin.
Well, thanks. It definitely sounds interesting. Can I ask a question back? Basically, what is the governance model or what's the decision model behind it? I mean, is it basically, let's say, eventually boils down to a peer-to-peer decision, like everyone eventually decides whom else they trust, or what is the governance, what's the governance model behind it?
I can respond if I may. So this is, a question is to be solved. So we, at least our work was started with technology and looking at existing, because all the COVID networks we work with, they're already in production. So looking at their existing process, existing governance, but the idea is at the meta level is to be, needs to be governed more kind of like in a decentralized way, in a sense that what we're looking at is we're not asking everyone to follow a very kind of comprehensive kind of governance, but more in a sense that you have your own governance, but to be participating, to be discovered at a meta level, there are certain set of information you need to provide regardless of your governance. And that information, for example, like who you are, right? And you know, and some of like the document you're providing, you know, like the meta platform needs to validate, are you who you are? And also are those informations are kind of legitimate information that coming from you? So the meta network is not saying that, you know, this country, you need to this and that because you can't do it. And you have to give them kind of their own, like, especially nation state, their sovereignty, but at the same time being validating the trust information on the meta platform. So this is the next step. We're about to kick off a consultation period at UNDP in the first quarter of next year. So that hopefully this is something, because we have figured out a lot of technology requirements, very, very practical ones. And next step needs to be figure out some of the foundational governance piece. And part of the reason why we're using COVID as a kind of like the first use case is because a lot of things are real. It's not just like hypothetical. So hopefully we'll have more to share with this group as we progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy. And thank you, Colin. Yeah, definitely. This is certainly a forum where we could bring any updates on the governance layer of the tech stack, and it feels like, right, trusted registries are going to be popular and challenging at the same time in the months to come. Yeah, thank you all for sharing. We're getting to the top of the hour. Any last minute questions or announcement? This is also where, if you're thinking about something that this community should be aware of, feel free to drop it in the chat or just open up your mic again. Maybe not, and that's completely fine. So thanks everyone for coming together this Monday again. We'll likely see you next Monday. As always, we send out an email on Friday with the agenda, or we cancel the event. We're getting close to Christmas. I think we may have something for you next Monday, so stay tuned. Check your emails on Friday. And thank you very much, Colin, for joining us and sharing. We'd love to have you back. And with that, let's call it a day. Thank you, and have a happy rest of your day.